I had a car, but on most days in that fall of 1973, I walked to Joyland from Mrs. Shoplaw's beachside accommodations in the town of Heavens Bay. It seemed like the right thing to do. The only thing, actually. By early September, Heaven Beach was almost completely deserted, which suited my mood. That fall was the most beautiful of my life. Even 40 years later, I can say that. And I was never so unhappy. I can say that, too. People think first love is sweet, and never sweeter than when that first bond snaps. You've heard 1,000 pop and country songs that prove the point. Some fool got his heart broke. Yet that first broken heart is always the most painful, the slowest to mend, and leaves the most visible scar. What's so sweet about that? Through September and right into October, the North Carolina skies were clear and the air was warm even at 7 in the morning when I left my second floor apartment by the outside stairs. If I started with a light jacket on, I was wearing it tied around my waist before I had finished half of the 3 miles between the town and the amusement park. I'd make Betty's Bakery my first stop, grabbing a couple of still warm croissants. My shadow would walk with me on the sand at least 20 feet long. Hopeful gulls smelling the croissants in their wax paper would circle overhead, and when I walked back, usually around 5, although sometimes I stayed later, there was nothing waiting for me in Heavens Bay, a town that mostly went sleepy by when summer was over, my shadow walked with me on the water. If the tide was in, it would waver on the surface, seeming to do a slow hula. Although I can't be completely sure, I think the boy and the woman and their dog were there from the first time I took that walk. The shore between the town and the cheerful, blinking gimcrackery of Joyland was lined with summer homes, many of them expensive, most of them clapped shut after Labor Day, but not the biggest of them, the one that looked like a green wooden castle. A boardwalk led from its wide back patio down to where the seagrass gave way to the fine white sand. At the end of the boardwalk was a picnic table, shaded by a bright green beach umbrella. In its shade, the boy sat in his wheelchair, wearing a baseball cap and covered from the waist down by a blanket even in the late afternoons when the temperature lingered in the 70s. I thought he was 5 or so, surely no older than 7. The dog, a Jack Russell Terrier, either lay beside him or sat at his feet. The woman sat on one of the picnic table benches, sometimes reading a book, mostly just staring out at the water. She was very beautiful. Going or coming, I always waved at them, and the boy waved back. She didn't. Not at first. 1973 was the year of the OPEC oil embargo, the year Richard Nixon announced he was not a crook, the year Edward G. Robinson and Noel Coward died. It was Devin Jones's lost year. I was a 21-year-old virgin with literary aspirations. I possessed 3 pair of blue jeans, 4 pair of jockey shorts, a clunker Ford with a good radio, occasional suicidal ideations, and a broken heart. Sweet, huh? The heartbreaker was Wendy Keegan, and she didn't deserve me. It's taken me most of my life to come to that conclusion, but you know the old saw, better late than never. She was from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I was from South Berwick, Maine. That made her practically the girl next door. We had begun going together, as we used to say, during our freshman year at UNH. We actually met at the freshman mixer, and how sweet is that? Just like one of those pop songs. We were inseparable for 2 years, went everywhere together and did everything together. Everything, that is, but it. We were both work-study kids with university jobs. Hers was in the library, mine was in the Commons cafeteria. We were offered the chance to hold on to those jobs during the summer of 1972, and of course we did. The money wasn't great, but the togetherness was priceless. I assume that would also be the deal during the summer of 1973, until Wendy announced that her friend Renee had gotten them jobs working at Filene's in Boston. "Where does that leave me?" I asked. "You can always come down," she said. "I'll miss you like mad, but really, Deb, we could probably use some time apart." A phrase that is very often a death knell. She may have seen that idea on my face because she stood on tiptoe and kissed me. "Absence makes the heart grow fonder," she said. "Besides, with my own place, maybe you can stay over." But she didn't quite look at me when she said that, and I never did stay over. "Too many roommates," she said, "too little time." Of course, such problems can be overcome, but somehow we never did, which should have told me something. In retrospect, it tells me a lot. Several times we had been very close to it, but it just never quite happened. She always drew back, and I never pressed her. God help me, I was being gallant. I have wondered often since what would have changed for good or for ill if I had not been. What I know now is that gallant young men rarely get pussy. Put it on a sampler and hang it in your kitchen.